Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
All right, welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. Got a couple guests today. Got Molly Biggs and Thomas Gould. Both recently were interns with the USGA's Green Section. You might have caught my podcast with Zach Nicolaudis. They worked with Zach pretty hand in hand. Guys, how are you?
Doing good. Thank you.
Doing great.
I guess before we dive into to your internship and what all that was about and the experiences with that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Molly, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having us. My name is Molly Biggs, and I'm in my first year right now of my master's degree at Iowa State University. I came from Kansas State, where I got my bachelor's in turf management, and really just like fell in love with the game of golf, and that's how I got into turf. I was super involved in my undergrad in like our turf club, and just like really wanted to dive deeper into it. When I heard more about like what the USGA offered for an internship, I was super interested. I really liked the job of like the course consultant. So I reached out to the USGA, and that's kind of how I ended up in that internship over the summer. So.
And Thomas?
Yeah. So, grew up in central Iowa, Des Moines area. And from like, as long as I can remember, I always loved my parents' lawn and mowing and all that stuff. So eventually found the program at Iowa State, did my undergraduate and master's degree there, did a little bit of work with the athletics department growing in Jack Trice Stadium and Johnny Majors practice facility. And then kind of all through that, found my way to golf and finished my master's degree in this past May, and found the USGA and kind of what they do very interesting. So kind of reached out looking to see if I could get some experience with them, and they had an internship program. So luckily was able to kind of apply to that and be accepted. So and that's how I kind of got here. Now I'm at Chicago Golf Club. I'm an assistant superintendent and just having a ball.
Awesome. I didn't mention you two were two of seven interns with the Green Section. So pretty, pretty elite company there. I apologize because I don't know this. Were you two working together as well with internship, or were you guys kind of doing, separate, similar things, but at separate times or places?
Yeah. So for the first 2 weeks, we were both with Zach traveling on course consulting visits. So we spent 1 week in the state of Ohio, kind of traveling around to different golf courses, stationed out of Columbus. And then the second week we were in Chicago, traveling sort of around the Chicago area to Milwaukee. And then we split ways, and I went to Pebble Beach for the U.S. Women's Open, where I got to work with like Darren Bavard and his team on the agronomy side over there. Mm-hmm. I also had a really unique opportunity to volunteer with the Women in Turf crew out there for the Women's Open. But then, yeah, Tom went up to Century World, right?
Went to Century World up in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, after doing a couple weeks in Ohio and then in Chicagoland area. But got really a good look at what championship agronomy looks like, preparing for championships, understanding how much prep and how much work really does go into getting those surfaces ready for competition.
Yeah, I was going to lead in. You guys, you were at the Senior Open, Thomas, and U.S. Women's Open, Molly. That had to be a pretty cool experience. Can you maybe expand on those experiences a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah. So the U.S. Women's Open was super unique. Like Tom mentioned, we really got to dive into everything that it takes to make a championship run smoothly and just in general. So it was super unique for me to be out at Pebble because it is a resort golf course. So they had regular daily play all the way up until the championship practice rounds started. So they were only closed for about 4 days before the championship actually begun. So it was super fun to get to see the way that the USGA staff sort of manage that, and the way that they work with the grounds crew of the golf course, because it is still like the golf course's like course. The USGA is just there to like support them and to help them get the course into championship condition. And it was really fun to get to see the way that like those two teams interacted. I got to see it from both sides, both the USGA side, and then when I swapped over to be a volunteer, I got to see it from the grounds crew side. So it was super fun just to like, one, get to be out at Pebble Beach for the Women's Open, and two, just to get to see the way that all of the people communicate, and the way that everybody really just wants the same thing for the championship to run smoothly.
Thomas, how about you?
Yeah, so I spent, you know, my 2 weeks up in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Very different from Pebble Beach in terms of Molly's experience. Century World had no play leading into the U.S. Senior Open last year. They shut the course down entirely. So it was kind of interesting to look at a blank slate of a golf course leading into the tournament. But it was really interesting to see how the Ground Me team really works as like a liaison between tournament directors, rules officials, and the agronomy team, in terms of superintendent, assistants, volunteers, all of that. So what I was mainly working on like a day-to-day basis was like data collection, understanding what practices the maintenance team was doing and how that related to performance of the course and of the playing surfaces. So kind of looking into that, tracking that, and then communicating with all the stakeholders, essentially, kind of what we were doing, good or bad, and then how we were going to kind of change that, angling in from advanced week into tournament play, kind of slowly progressing the playing surface to elite levels.
I'm sure there's so much going on behind the scenes at those championships, and also, you know, leading up to those. Is there any experiences, or maybe even just a funny story of something that happened, you know, behind the scenes that obviously nobody probably knows about, but you guys kind of, you know, used as a building block for kind of what you learned?
Yeah. So I have a fun example. In the practice week leading up to the championship, so the first couple of days of the actual championship week, there were practice rounds going on, and there were people who communicate with the players who are USGA staff that go out and watch the way that the ladies were making decisions about which shots that they were going to take. So at Pebble, there's number six goes like up the hill. Mm-hmm. Up to like a elevated green, and on the right side, Tiger Woods has this infamous shot out of the rough. It's totally blind up to the top of the green, but he just hit it right out of there and like got up to the top of the hill onto the green.
I would say that half of the field would pitch it back into the fairway, but certainly not Tiger. He's got 202 yards to the hole. I think he could probably get a 7 or 8 iron on it. He may get it all the way up there.
Look at this. Look at this. His strength is not an advantage. It's just not a fair fight.
No, it really isn't, Roger.
I mean, that is phenomenal. Puts it on the green, 15 feet from the hole.
My question is, how do you beat that? I mean, I agree with you, Gary. Half the field would say, look over to the fairway and say, I'm just going to pitch it out over here, and I'm going to try to make a five.
And so there are a lot of people now that are tempted to imitate that shot. and so there was just a lot of hesitation by players over on the right side about should they take the shot or not. And then it resulted in a lot of conversation about, was the rough too long, or was it too difficult for the players who were good to be rewarded by taking a risky shot, or penalized by not being able to successfully get the shot out of that rough. And so we had several conversations like that, that I didn't really realize how in tune they want all of the playing surfaces on the golf course to be. And so they were very, very focused on the playability of the golf course, how players were going to be taking shots, and if they were going to be rewarded for taking risky shots, or if the shot was just so difficult, nobody was going to take the risk. So that was super fun for me to get to watch. And then, of course, that came from the tournament director, the championship directors said, this is what we would like to kind of move forward with. And then it went to like the USGA agronomy team and to the course agronomy team, all in the same meeting, because everyone gets together at like 2:30. They call them 2:30 meetings. They have all of the people involved in the championship meet to kind of get everybody on the same page every day. So it was super cool to watch the way that stuff all happened.
Thomas, how about you? You got a story, or maybe just in general, just some things that happened behind the scenes that, you know, Joe Public wouldn't know about?
Yeah. So what I didn't realize is the process in which the championship directors and the championship staff go about selecting hole locations, given days of tournament play. And a lot of it is just them hanging out on the greens with like flags, marking flags and tape measures and putting to things and seeing how they feel firsthand. And it was kind of interesting because it's, you know, they want to make them challenging, but they want to make them fair. So it's just fun to see how far they would try and push things and, you know, try to really find some very challenging pin locations or some hole locations that, you know, they'd have me putt around a little bit and I was like, oh my goodness, this is just outrageous. But for the professional, not just a Joe Schmo like me, it's what they need to kind of keep them interested, in the round, you know, making sure that they're scoring, and, you know, being challenged.
Well, and maybe what some people don't realize, you know, not only are you picking out hole locations for the 4 days of championship, but, you know, you got 3 or 4 days of practice rounds as well. So, you know, you're finding, I don't know, 7 to 8 probably hole locations for, you know, for a championship that big, is probably a challenge too.
Yeah. And then also, you know, based on weather or how the course is coming into shape, sometimes they do end up throwing out hole locations that they really do want, but, you know, maybe greens are too fast or, you know, it's not, the conditions aren't perfect for the hole location that they had in mind. So it's always an evolving process. And that was really interesting to see and really how much time that actually does take, because they're fairly, holistic in their approach to looking at each green, individually and kind of sorting all that stuff out.
Molly, I'll let you take this one first, but the course consulting you did, tell me about that and kind of what we heard a little bit about that, obviously a lot about it from Zach in another podcast, but what was that like for you, and what do you take kind of taken away from that?
Yeah, I had sort of knew what to expect, but also really didn't have any clue. Like I knew that we were going to be traveling to different golf courses and meeting with the superintendent, sometimes the greens committee or a couple of members of the greens committee, sometimes the golf professional, and we were going to talk about the golf course. I didn't really know what things on the golf course we were going to be talking about or what the structure to these meetings really were going to look like. It was kind of just like jumping off the deep end, just like following along. So we went with Zach to these course consulting visits, and really we just got to be bystanders pretty much for the meetings. It was really good to like listen to everything that Zach had to like offer these golf courses, all of the advice, whether that was from a previous like course consulting experience that he'd had before, or from his time as superintendent and assistant superintendent in his career before he was a course consultant. He just had like some really great tips and tricks to offer some golf courses. And it was also really cool to see the range of golf courses that he visited. Like, there were golf courses that are hosting PGA championship tournaments every year. And then there were like just the regular old 18 hole like community golf course that we mm-hmm. were also visiting, sure. like city owned golf courses. So it was really cool to see like the way that he tailors each individual appointment to the needs of the golf course. And uses also his like site history and relationship history with that specific club to help give like better advice. So the longer he's there, the better relationship he builds, the more he gets to know that golf course and the way that they operate, the better advice he can offer them. And then also on a lot of things was like a second opinion to the superintendent. It seemed like a lot of times superintendents sort of bounced ideas off of Zach. And I think that is like a really good thing for our industry, because sometimes people don't like talk about everything or like get an outside opinion all the time. So I think it was really good for a lot of courses to be able to have that like second opinion from someone considered a professional at what they do, and just like know that they were getting like good, solid advice rooted in research and evidence and other things that had been going on around them in the industry.
Thomas, I'll kind of piggyback on something Molly said. You know, there's a lot of sharing of advice, and I think superintendents in general are open to ideas, especially, you know, if there's research and that thing, you know, that type of thing to back it up. So I don't feel, and I'll let you speak on this, it's not like when you go in for a consultation, it's not like you're telling the superintendent, hey, you're doing this wrong. Hey, you need to do it this way. It's more of like, hey, okay, you've identified this problem. Have you tried this? Maybe try this. We've seen this work, you know, maybe at this facility 10 years ago. You know, hey, I've seen this over across the street at this course. Can you kind of speak on that as just, you know, the problem solving and that type of thing that I feel like superintendents are so open to?
Yeah, I mean, throughout all of our site visits, every golf course superintendent we interacted with, you know, was really on the track of the problem solving already. They see their facility every day. They see these problems and they can acknowledge them and kind of, they have lots of time to think about what could potentially fix some issues. So, really it's just, a lot of like, oh yeah, like that's a good idea. Or that, you know, that's something, but maybe have you thought about this? So it's definitely, not a lot of harsh steering by any means. You know, all the golf course superintendents that we interacted with were very bright, so didn't take anything special to come in and say, hey, like, for the most part you're doing a good job, but we're seeing these things that, you know, if you take these recommendations if you want, but if not, you know, we'll do just fine.
Either one of you can take this question, but something I've seen a lot of facilities that we've been to, you know, years ago, there was this thought of like, oh, you gotta plant so many trees. You gotta plant, you know, every tree, every place. And now, you know, courses are starting to, you know, take out some trees, obviously, because they have to with, you know, some of the disease that's unfortunately hit a lot of courses, but also just from a playability, but also just keeping the turf healthy. Can you guys kind of talk about maybe some experiences you've seen, especially with the tree issue at a lot of courses that have kind of got overgrown?
I think we talked about trees on every single visit that we were on over the summer. Superintendents were asking frequently about like what things should be done to just overall generally improve the course. It's also like in the write-ups that you do after the visit that you create sort of like a going forward plan. Like a plan for moving forward. And a lot of those, there were plans to take down several of the trees around the golf course. So I think a lot of it though, is it's not just willy-nilly go chop down the trees. It's identifying which trees are problems on the golf course. So whether that's like sunlight competition around, like if you have par three tees that just get beat up and they're shaded and there's a lot of trees around them, sort of like identifying meticulously which of these trees can we take down or thin out to improve the health of the turf on our our tee box without damaging the like the environment of the golf course. Like, we don't want to just remove all of the trees and that's that. Same thing like around putting greens. I think too, like, a lot of people don't consider that there's differences in the summer sunlight and the winter sunlight. And I know a lot of golf course superintendents see that and understand that, but like, sometimes it's also good to just get a second opinion on, like, is this tree really a problem, or should we be leaving it for the like the environment of the golf course, the ecosystem it creates too. So a lot of just like good ideas bouncing off like individual trees, like one at a time.
Thomas, I'll go to you. You know, water is another issue that's, you know, across the country and across the world, you know, water quality and, you know, consumption of water and being good stewards of that. And I think, you know, superintendents are always mindful of that, but can you kind of just speak on kind of the water issue that's maybe on the forefront of a lot of facilities?
Yeah. I mean, drought seems to be occurring more and more frequently. It's certainly an issue even for in places where you don't see, you know, like arid environments, places that have, you know, reservoirs that are only limited in size, and they're trying to water all these areas, you know, to keep up with what they're losing from plants, with the plant evapotranspiration every day. So it's a problem everywhere, but just kind of understanding, you know, how to use that water most efficiently is important. Use of like wetting agents, things of that sort, to try and essentially keep the soil profile wetter for longer, without having to water as frequently, is always something that you can always look into. But every place is different, so it's hard to give like a very broad stroke. But it's certainly something that I saw that was important when we were with the green section this past summer. But yeah, it's certainly a case by case situation in terms of water, but in general, yeah, use as little as possible. And that way you provide a firmer, faster golf course experience for your golfers. Anyway, so it kind of works out. It's a kind of double benefit.
Molly, I'll go to you on this, since you're still in school, in college, and working on your master's degree. Like you said, what's kind of the goal, I guess, career-wise? You know, are you wanting to kind of stay around the Midwest? Are you open? Are you, you know, talk to me about that if you would.
Yeah, kind of seems like the billion-dollar question. I honestly am just so jazzed about everything in turf that I don't know if I really have like a set, this is what I want to do, and if I don't do that, then I'm not going to do anything. I'm sort of trying to take it like one step at a time. I love the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm from Kansas. But I'm also open to like going other places and seeing new things. I love travel. And I think that's part of what really excites me about the potential of maybe doing this job, the course consulting job, in the future. I really like something that I can be challenged in every day. I am constantly like solving problems and looking at new things and talking to new people. But you can do that in a lot of different jobs all across the country. So I think it's really going to just come down to what's available when I'm ready to leave school, and sort of like, yeah, where my career path is taking me and what the next available steps are.
Cool. Thomas, I don't want to assume anything, but I, you know, a head golf course superintendent's probably maybe one of the things you're aspiring to do. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely something I'm looking into. I try to leave my options pretty open. So,
sure.
But yeah, golf course superintendent work, seems very interesting. I'm having a ball here at Chicago Golf Club, where I'm at as an assistant. But we'll kind of see how things go. Consulting agronomy, based on my internship experience, could be something I could see myself doing long term, but you never know.
Molly, I want to rewind to something you mentioned. Tell us about that, the Women in Turf program and experience that you had out at Pebble Beach? Because I'm thinking that's a program that's just keeps gaining more and more steam.
Yeah. So the Women in Turf program is honestly pretty new. The total number of like GCSAA members, Golf Course Superintendents Association members, mm-hmm. that are female is 2%. 98% are men, 2% are women. So it's an initiative that the GCSAA identified as something that they wanted to be able to sort of continue to pursue and grow and connect women. So it's sort of modeled after Canada, that has like a mentorship program where they like gather all of the women in turf in Canada and like get them together, and then they talk to each other, and then they go back to their courses, but they still have connections to each other. And it just like promotes a better, healthier like work environment, because you have other people around you that are like you. So getting to go to Pebble Beach and be with there were 35 or 40 other women there was absolutely crazy. I had only met like one other female college student who was studying turf grass. And when I got there, and I was like, wow, there are so many more other girls in their like early to mid 20s who are interested in this thing. And it's so refreshing to get to talk to other girls about it. It was just, it's like a different type of friendship that you also have at work. Again, just like really refreshing and like makes everybody feel a little bit more at home at work. The GCSAA has also launched a lot of other initiatives. Like they had a Women's Leadership Academy this last fall that I got to attend, which was super great. And they're just going to continue to grow that program and get more ladies involved. From all aspects of the industry, whether that's working on a golf course or working in sports fields or like a chemical sales representative, whatever that may be, getting more women involved is something that they're really excited about and something that I'm definitely looking forward to for the future.
Molly, just curious, and specifically on the women's side, what's maybe some advice you'd give to, you know, maybe a middle school or high school students that's, you know, likes the outdoors and wants to get into the turf field one way or the other? What would you tell them? Yeah.
I think that there are so many different opportunities in turf. Most people just see like golf course superintendent. And that's a job I wasn't really sure if I wanted. And so it kind of scared me away from the turf industry at first. But if there was like a girl in middle school, high school that came to me and was like, I really like golf. I really like being outside. Or like I grew up on a farm. And so part of the pull to the turf grass industry was that it has some fundamental roots in agriculture. And it's sort of the same ideas as farming and being like a good steward of the land. And so like, if those are things that interest you, there are so many other things to do in turf other than just be a golf course superintendent and still even work with the game of golf. So there's just like, leave your options open, I guess is what I would tell them. And don't get scared because the primary job that's promoted is something that you don't see yourself doing. There's just so many things. If you have a passion for it, like you're going to find something that you love in the industry.
Thomas, kind of similar question. What would today's Thomas maybe tell, you know, 16 to 20 year old Thomas that's, you know, thinking about and serious about, you know, the turf grass and, you know, that type of thing?
Yeah. Work experience is huge. Get out there as early as you can. You know, we have plenty of high school kids that work here at Chicago Golf Club, do kind of detail work, bunker work, mowing greens, that kind of stuff. Getting familiar, getting comfortable on equipment, such a huge, huge benefit to so many young people. So, you know, go to school, learn, you know, make sure you're solid in your agronomics. We always get caught every now and again, learning more every day. So, it's been, yeah, I guess for past me, just study hard but stay outside.
I like that. Guys, before I let you go, and not to put you on the spot, but you got a good Zach story from your internship. You got something that maybe he didn't share with us in the podcast that I had with him. Anything funny that happened along the way or anything like that?
It's just kind of interesting. We were with Zach for like 3 weeks. We didn't listen to a single second of music the entire time we were with him. So many hour and a half, 2 hour drives here and there, going from course to course, nothing. Always just chat, which was great. Honestly, something I wasn't expecting. And on it personally, when I'm in the car doing anything, I always have some sort of noise, music, podcast, something going on. But to kind of bring it back and just chat and really get to know the people you're with, was a great experience, but definitely something I wasn't accustomed to. So
that's a good one. Yeah.
My fun story would just be, we did spend like a lot of time together, kind of like as a team. And I remember Zach picked us up from the hotel we were staying at the first night, we were there, and, or the first morning we were there, and, it had to be like 5:30 or 6 in the morning. And, we were like kind of sluggish and got in the truck, and Zach goes, I had coffee at home this morning, but I was going to wait to stop for breakfast until we got there. But are you guys interested in like getting coffee before we go? Like, I know I wouldn't be able to wake up without it. And I was like, I'm so glad that you asked. I just need a coffee right now. And so he drove us to the Starbucks down the street, and for the whole week, like, that became our routine. And then the hotel that we were staying at in Chicago had a Starbucks in it, and so we would meet in the hotel lobby and again get a coffee every morning. And by the end of the trip, we could have all like told each other what our morning breakfast like order was going to be, which was just again like really fun.
Turned into a routine, but a fun experience along the way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, one more question, and this, Molly, this is just going to be for you before we wrap up. Our listeners can't see the video, but I see you're rocking the Kansas State golf sweatshirt. How do you get away with that in Ames and Iowa State?
Yeah, there's a lot of teasing that comes with it. I love both schools. I really do love both programs and appreciate like what both programs have done for me and my education and the opportunities I've had from both. But I do think that it helps that we're both like ag-based Big 12 schools.
Yep.
So like a lot of people at both schools have very similar values, very similar backgrounds. It's like the same thing, a different flavor is the way I've been describing it to people. So it just, I really didn't have that hard of a time adjusting because it was like Kansas State, but red when I got here.
There you go.
So it's been really great. There's definitely teasing that comes with it. But I also was on the turf bowl team last year that did better than the Iowa State turf bowl team did. So.
Zing!
I give them a little bit of crap for that too, but
that's
it's
hilarious.
Fun. It's all good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun deal. Well, guys, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us. Congratulations on everything you've already accomplished, and I know you guys are going to go far. So, hopefully maybe we'll talk to you again down the road sometime. And like I said, again, thanks for taking some time with us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Clint.